Three, two, one. Welcome, everyone. This is Joel Wright, and this is Devon Dice to Pop. Yes, this is Devon Dice Podcast, episode 51, I believe. And we are actually live from the Hilton, right next to the NEC, where the UK Games Expo 2018 is being held.
Woo!
Yay! And actually, I'm joined by all four co-hosts now. No, three co-hosts, sorry. All four of us are here.
Special guest.
And yeah, well, we got Sam.
Hi, guys.
We got Lewis.
Hello.
And making a return trip all the way from Essen. Podcast is
Mike. Why, hello.
Yeah. Yes, this is a live recording of the podcast, and I do apologise for the audio quality. Our mic settings were too high, and then our quiet room turned into a noisy room with the staff of the Hilton preparing for lunch. I am very sorry, but please listen. So yes, we're actually recording in the Hilton. It's Sunday, lunchtime. Sam pretty knackered, Lewis is pretty knackered,
yeah.
Mike's Mike, and I'm still raring to go, but we're going to grab 30 minutes and talk about our thoughts of this year's expo. So Lewis and Mike, and you might ask what Mike is doing here at the very last minute.
Wait a minute, no personal stories, the wife might be listening.
The very last minute, Mike was able to come, is that right?
That's right.
He was given a ticket to come. So luckily we had a spare bed.
Are you going to tell a story of why you have a spare bed?
Well.
Yeah. So you see, it turns out Joel booked the family room. And then when his wife found out, she said, no, the family's not coming. So lucky for me, we've got a spare bed.
Yes, very lucky.
Who's having to top and tail with Joel, though?
No, we've got three beds.
Three beds.
Yeah.
Michael's in the child bed.
Right.
don't tell the hotel.
Michael's been our little boy for a little
bit. Take me to the bring and buy. Okay, Michael, go to the bring and buy.
Okay. So, Lewis.
Yes.
First time here. What are your thoughts?
Yes, I've had a great time. It's been really good fun. It's very different to Essen. It seemed to have a much more of a sort of more chilled, relaxed vibe. Essen felt very crammed, very crazy, quick bye. And that's partly, there seems to be way more demonstrations here than in Essen. I don't know if Essen was just so big that all the demonstrations just seem to always sort of be taken. But there's a much more of a focus on playing games here rather than necessarily buying games. I also quite like that because at Essen all the big new things come out. So all the massive companies have got their main stands there and they're just flogging everything they've got, kind of trying to make as much money as possible. Whereas here, I've noticed at the UK Games Expo, there's a lot more for sale that's not brand new, but at some really good prices. Because my experience from Essen was that, don't buy at a convention, you're going to pay twice the price or you know, significantly more. Just find the games you like, give them a try, and then go somewhere else. But actually here, there's been some really quite good games for some pretty good prices. So I've kind of broken my rules a little bit.
So this is my first time at the Expo, but back in the day, I used to go to Gen Con and Origins in the U.S., and this is about the size and feel of Origins. Just as good, just as lively, lots of things going on. So, yeah. Let me ask you guys a question. You've been here for a few years now. How long have you been coming, Joe?
This is my seventh show?
Yeah.
So my fifth.
Yeah. Fifth, right. So how is it changing? Because people always talk about how the expo is getting bigger, it's changing, it's getting better. What do you see now that's different from even last year?
Well, I think now it's changed. It's gone from that where it was just a group of people come into this place and there'd be people selling games and that. But it was just a small group of people come in and playing games and meet and the same. It's now grown to that kind of big convention feel. It's in two big halls now. There's so much going on that even I am just struggling to say, how can I fit all this I want to do in a weekend? Which is not a bad thing. It's always something to do. But there's so much going on in the halls. in 1 and 2 that I forget about. There's also stuff still going on in Hilton. And even that, if it weren't for these two actually finally saying, let's go and see this dark room you keep banging on about, I probably wouldn't even got around to seeing the dark room because there's just so much I want to do.
And that's the difference as well, because it's like, originally it would have been in a room not dissimilar to this one, or a couple of rooms this sort of size in the Clarendon Suites. That was where you went the first time.
Just like a hotel conference room.
Yeah, literally. And then it scaled up to go to the Hilton where they had the big suites, and now it's in the NEC. And I think that it's just transitioning from that slightly smaller, and it's transitioning along with the growth in the hobby, obviously, because the growth in the hobby is also helping make this change in the expo. And there is, it's now a full-on weekend entertainment thing as opposed to just a come and play some games in a room, which is great. But I like the fact that it's still got that aspect. You can still roll up at the NEC or at the Hilton or any of the rooms, hotels around the area, and you can play games with people.
That's right. And I know in the past years people have talked about open gaming, but there was no problem at all this year. Plenty of open gaming, no matter what time, where you went.
Yeah, if there's any complaints about there not being enough space, then those people are crazy.
That's right.
We never struggled to find space. We did get kicked out of the organized play area, the tournament area, because we did just go and sit down. Like a little bunch of
no one was there for miles. It's like, well, maybe they must have space for tonight.
Yeah. I think that might be the only complaint some might have, is there were a lot of tables that were empty for where the competitions were being played. But to be fair, those tables were set up dedicated for tournaments for that entire weekend.
So. And there was still more space in the actual open areas.
Yeah, there was. I mean, the places in the Hilton, all the conference rooms in the Hilton got absolutely packed. But then now the extra space in Hall 2, there was always space there when we went down there. That was absolutely fine, wasn't it?
People like to come to the Hilton. I think it's just almost now a historic thing. People come to the hotel. That's where the big gathering happens. And that's where all the big tables are, the big rooms are. But actually, to be fair, the gaming space in Hall 2 was really good. The only complaint I'd have is that, I can't remember which day it was. Friday night, they closed the bar a bit early. I'd like to if they'd stay open a bit longer in the bar. Because there wasn't anywhere to get food or drink after, say, 10 o'clock or 9 o'clock or something.
Yeah, no, there wasn't. It was really annoying.
So they could have done with someone just being on a stand, having a stand in the hall or getting the NEC to just man it for another hour or two. Because they were open until midnight or 1 o'clock or something.
Yeah, so what about the games that people have played? What have we found? Michael, have you found anything exciting?
Well, one of the big differences between this and RRS and Journey is that at Essen, every major publisher, all the medium publishers, all of the publishers are there showing their latest games. It's not really quite that level. It's not close to that level here at the Expo.
Yeah.
So there are a few of the big publishers, but most of the games we actually sat down and played were Kickstarter games or Kickstarter companies, or maybe even games that are still in development for Kickstarter. So we played quite a few of those.
I think that's the thing why possibly the Expo's grown so big now is Kickstarter. We are literally being bombarded. Everywhere we turn, we're being bombarded. Oh, I've got a Kickstarter game coming out. Go and check it out when it comes out and being handed a flyer or a business card or something like that.
Do you want a review copy?
But then it's also benefit because now we've got certain publishers like Alley Cat Games, Lucky Duck Games, all that. These have started on Kickstarter with one game, and now they've grown and actually becoming
established.
Established. Yeah.
You've got Minecraft Games, and you've got ITB. You know, they literally go from 1 year where they're a Kickstarter company, and the next year they're actually a publisher
with a big stand and four or five games.
And you can see that transition year to year where these companies come along, they've got a tiny stand, they're just doing a bit of demoing.
And then two years later
they're suddenly a bigger concern and they're a bigger part of the expo journey, which is it's fun to see actually.
Sure. Now I know Lewis, you made a comment the other day about not being so thrilled about the fact that it's so easy for a Kickstarter company to suddenly become a big publishing company. It's quite easy to start churning out games, and maybe many of these games aren't spectacular.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it depends on the background of companies. So I think there's some companies that you can sort of come across that have had the odd successful Kickstarter, and a lot of them seem to have perhaps backgrounds in design and production, so they can produce a very successful crowdfunding Kickstarter because it looks great, it's slick, it's got all the miniatures. But actually, I think, you know, sometimes when the game arrives, it can be a little bit of a disappointment. And one of the things that I was really sort of saying, and one of the things that we've noticed, is, you know, if you play a game from a big publisher, it goes through such a rigorous vetting process. You know, there's been so many sort of layers where, you know, it's been sort of selected by different people and then sort of before finally being taken sort of through and then, you know, nicely play tested. Actually, a game from a big established publisher, I would argue, you're unlikely to get anything that's awful. Very unlikely.
I think there's that's true. It's very true. But I think I know there's a good case of a couple of publishers. I'm not going to name them, but I know a couple of companies that would back that up. As in, you know, they've released a couple of games themselves, and they've not been great. But they did. Those games did give them the foundation upon which to start as a bigger company. So a good example would be ITB. You know, they started with Molecular, which even by their accounts, it wasn't ever a successful Kickstarter. But it gave them, but it wasn't great received after the Kickstarter. But it gave them the foundation upon which they could then start growing, and it gave them a learning journey. And I think the likes of ITB, they start like that, they get going, they then start signing other games onto their brand, and then they start becoming a much bigger, much more successful, much more rigorous company. And I think they will, you know, companies like that will potentially become the bigger publishers that will be more rigorous, more selective, and fine tune those games. And I think that's part of the journey that we, you know, Kickstarter is so new, actually, in terms of the impact on everybody, not just the hobby, that I think we're, as consumers, we're also on a journey of learning how to handle selectivity. We're just bombarding companies with money, going, yeah, we'll buy that, and then we get it, we go, oh, don't really like it, and we put it on eBay straight away.
Yeah.
You know, but I think I'm now certainly being more selective in the games I'm backing. I've backed two this year, whereas this time last year I'd have been like had a dozen.
I have nothing against Kickstarter. I back games on Kickstarter, and you know there have been some great games that come. I'm not having a go at Kickstarter or new stuff. I think it's great that these new companies are starting. I'm just thinking for people who are just sort of recently getting into the hobby, maybe they have a few games, jump up to sort of Kickstarter. You could get stung with perhaps not a great game, and so sometimes it's best to sort of get a feel for kind of games and things that you like.
I think there's also, but I think if they are newer people to the hobby, though, they're potentially going to be happy with the Kickstarters because they are that new to the hobby. They haven't seen the things.
They don't know they could be better.
Whereas we've got a bedrock of comparison.
We know. This is like this, but not good enough.
Let's get back to the expo.
So one of the main things that's like a kind of thing you should do every time is go to the expo is doing the bring and buy, which Mike seems to spend most of his time in this weekend because he likes.
Mike hasn't left.
I wouldn't exaggerate, but the way people describe it, it's some sort of Mad Max, you know, apocalyptic free for all. But actually, it was very polite, very orderly.
I think they've done this year where they're only letting in a certain number of people at a time to mix around. Whereas in past years, it's just been a free for all, everyone bundling in. And it's like,
well, I'm gonna give you my views of the bring and buy. Number one, why have you got games that you're taking to a bring? Number one, you should be controlling your collections better and not just buying any old tat.
Rant time.
Number two, I've had to get up early every bloody morning so that we could get in early so Mike could stand in a queue to be first in the bring and buy so he could get the first possible choice.
You would have got up early even if there was no bring and buy.
It's been an absolute bloody nightmare. And so finally on Sunday... Saturday night, Michael says, "Oh, I found Islebound in the bring and buy. It's in there."
Yeah, I might have to cut this.
it's in the bring and buy. So I thought, okay, I'll give it a chance. So I'll see what this bring and buy nonsense is about. Went there, spent 40 minutes, couldn't find the bloody game, and it was supposed to be in there somewhere. Left, pointless, stupid. Don't like it.
All right, back to the expo.
Well, my point in that I think bring and buy might be my last time in doing the bring and buy selling stuff. I put about 28 games on, barely had not sold, and I think people are looking for that dirt cheap games now. And even I look around there and I was like, pick something up, oh, that looks good, nah, too expensive. And there's some ridiculous pricing going on in there.
Yeah, and there are some crazy prices. There's people selling games for more than you can buy them new on our stand or others.
That's right.
Which I find bonkers. But at the same time, I think you're right. It's like, it's the same as you. I'm kind of looking around. I've only been in there once, but I'm looking, I'm kind of going, oh, it's £10 cheaper. It's not quite cheap enough to make me just impulse buy it.
That's right.
And I think that's down to the people putting their prices on games. I think it's still a really worthwhile part of the expo, and it's a part that's really popular. I mean, I saw a line that was over 2 hours long just to get in there still. And I think it shows that it's really popular. And it makes quite a lot of money for the charity as well.
Yeah, but so there's people queuing. Are they expecting getting in and find the game they want for a really bargain price?
I think it's more about just it's part of the expo experience now. They go there every year. That's the thing they do. They're going to queue up. They're going to look around the bring and buy and see if they can find those one or two. I think it's more about finding those rare things. Like both me and Murray at the stand, we like going in to try and find those little unique little things that you're not going to see because they're out of print.
Yeah.
And okay, they might be not cheap, but you're not going to see them anywhere else
very easily. That's what you want,
isn't it? And you see them and you go, well, yeah, okay, I'll pick that up. That's only £15.
On the topic of retail, how have things been on the shop front?
Yeah, so Meeple's Corner? I've been working on the Meeple's Corner stand all weekend, and it's been very tiring. It's been every year we seem to do more and more trade. It's busier and busier every year with more people every year at the expo for a start. And Friday was very impressive. We had one box of the new Century Eastern Wonders game, which brand new release. It's a very soft launch. It wasn't like officially announced as a release title, but most of the traders had some copies. We had one box, and within 60 seconds, it was gone. Nice. People literally came running from the door into Meeple's Corner, grabbed them from the middle of the table with the playmat, grabbed it, and came to the till, and yeah, it were gone. 60 seconds, done. And we just had to keep turning people away, very disappointed for the rest of the day then.
Does Eastern Wonders have a playmat?
It's a Century Spice Road.
It's the Spice Road playmat, yeah.
I think it might be a dual one. I think you can probably put the board for... I'm not sure if you can or not. We could work it out.
Yeah.
But people were just buying anything related to it, just in case.
Don't risk it.
In general, though, it's been amazing. We did a lot of trade on Friday, more than we've ever done on a Friday before. I think it helped because we were open from the hall actually opened from 9 as opposed to from midday or 1 o'clock like it has in previous years. But by consequence, that made sure that we were all pretty knackered by Saturday lunchtime because that extra time and that extra heat. It's been very hot in the halls this year. And it's kind of taken the energy out of all of us a little bit. So by Saturday afternoon, we were all struggling a bit. But it's been a really fabulous expo. You know, we see all the friendly faces of people that we know and recognise from around the country that come back every year. My favourite story was I met a couple 3 years ago when we were still in the Hilton here, and I convinced them to buy a copy of Istanbul. I still didn't get their names. It's annoying. They knew mine amazingly. Anyway, I said, "Oh, go to the Thirsty Meeples Lending Library, pick it up, try it tonight, and then come back tomorrow morning. And if you like it, you can buy it tomorrow. We're not going to run out." They came back the very next day, said, "Yeah, we loved it." So bought it, and I was just like, success. It was a lot of work. I spent half an hour convincing them it was a good idea, but they came back and they bought it. And then there was this couple in the stand on Saturday morning. They were looking at Clank, show favourite. Well, for some of us at least.
He just doesn't want to admit it.
I decided I'm going to make it my mission. I'm going to go and I'm going to sell every copy of Clank today. If I see someone pick it up and look at it, I'm going to go over and I'm going to explain it. And I went up and I said, Clank's my favourite game at the moment. I think you'll probably like that one. And he turned around and goes, "You called Sam?" I was like, "Yes." He goes, "Oh, you sold us Istanbul 3 years ago." I'm like, "Oh, my word." Nice. I just still remembered him. So that was really nice. It was a really nice story. You sort of see the people that keep coming back. And you kind of start forming those relationships with customers that you don't even know the names of. And that's what I like the most about the expo.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're in a fixed position, you basically see everybody. They know to come to you rather than the other way around.
Yeah. And what about games-wise, Michael? What sort of things have you discovered? There's been so many games around. Is there anything that's particularly stood out for you? Or?
Well, one game I was keen to check out was Luxor.
Yes,
Nominated for the Spiel des Jahres.
Yeah.
And I can see why it was nominated. It's very nice. I really enjoyed playing it. Mm-hmm. I came away and I thought about it a bit and realized maybe I wasn't completely bowled over by it. But it's just a game that plays smoothly. It's enjoyable. It's about the same level of complexity as Ticket to Ride. Mm-hmm. It's a nice, light game that works. And, you know, as you say, from a big publisher, from Queen Games, you can tell they've really design the hell out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Very smooth, very elegant. So, nice game.
Yeah, yeah. What sort of mechanics are involved in there, Mike?
Well, it's a game about robbing tombs. So you have...
Sounds very politically correct.
Yeah, well. Robbing tombs. So it seems to be a pyramid, and you have a spiral track that you have not one, but a number of different meeples that you're moving along this track, trying to get certain numbers of meeples on the tiles, and each tile is a relic. And once you get a certain number, you can claim that relic. The innovative thing is that you have a hand of cards, and the cards control your movement, so they might have a number like 1, 2, or maybe some special things. And you can only use the card that's on the left or the right ends.
Mm.
So it's a bit like Bonanza, where you're having to manage your cards as you're moving these meeples around the board, trying to coordinate them to get to different places and claim the tiles. And there are a few other special things, but yeah, it's quite simple.
How do new cards come into your hand?
You draw them. You get a new card every turn.
What's they go in the end?
In the middle. So they go in the middle, and
yeah.
So you're even coordinating, planning how they're going to move from the middle outward to the ends.
Okay, so you've got to plan ahead. That's forward
right.
planning, I think.
Right.
That's quite good for a family game, isn't it?
But there's also the other thing is you're kind of building the deck as well, because when you land on keys, you can draw a new card from three stacks of decks, and you draw a card from that deck and add it to your hand, and once you use that card, that actually goes into the main deck and it will keep cycling around, and you might luckily draw it up, and I quite like that bit as well.
Yeah, so one person sort of gets a bonus by landing on it, but then once they've used it, it goes into the deck, so somebody else could then acquire it later in the game.
You could get it back, or someone else might get it back, and I thought that's actually quite clever.
Me and Christoph from People's Corner, we're going to try and nip across, because they're right opposite our stand. So this afternoon, when it quietens down, as long as they're still demoing it, we're going to try and go over and get ourselves a little demo of it.
So that was Luxor by Queen Games, the Spiel des Jahres nominated game.
Lewis, do you want to talk about a game that one of your favourites?
So the game that probably stood out the most for me at the UK Games Expo 2018 is probably, I'm going to go for it, it's going to have to be Holding On, The Troubled Life of Billy Kerr.
This is the one I wanted to hear about.
I mean, what an absolutely fascinating game. So, obviously, it's coming from sort of Hub Games, and it is...
What's the game
they... So Hub Games, and so obviously one of the main guys of Hub Games is Rory O'Connor, who came up with Rory Story Cubes, the very famous sort of family kids sort of storytelling game with cubes. And they recently released Untold Adventures Await, and that uses the cubes within it for sort of a role-playing game. So they're heavily invested sort of in storytelling games. And this kind of the latest one, Holding On, really seems to be going along that theme, but steering away from the kind of classic storytelling, going more with some more Euro elements. So it's very much a worker allocation game.
Mm-hmm.
You've got sort of three challenges that you have to do each day, and a limited number of workers to
base in a hospital, isn't it?
Yes, but yeah, it's based in a hospital. And basically, Billy Kerr is somebody who's come in after they've become unwell on a flight from Sydney to the UK.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I can say. So you're working at, you're one of the people working in the hospital. I think it fits best if your nurse is in the hospital. And essentially, one of you is a shift manager, allocates people to do all these different challenges that come throughout the day. And you've got a balance trying to get more information about him by sitting around and talking to him versus sort of keeping him alive. So first of all, you have to allocate sort of workers to do the challenge.
Mm.
And then once you've done the challenge, you get to pick one of two rewards.
Mm-hmm.
And the one reward will be basically stopping him from continuing down his downward spiral towards death. And the other one will be sitting and chatting to him and spending time with him, where he'll tell you some of his stories, some of his memories. But I love the way the story is told, because it's not barrages of text. Essentially, what happens is you get these sort of cards, which are his memories. And on the back, it'll have maybe a one-sentence description. So it's not a lot of reading, just one sentence. And then you'll sort of turn the card over, and it'll have a sort of very blurry picture, giving you a sort of an outline of what could possibly be going on. And I think there's five different story tracks. Mm-hmm. And I think there's six different sort of memories for each story track. Mm-hmm. And you get them all from a sort of random deck. And you're trying to piece bits together. And they kind of stitch together with sort of little symbols on the card. So you can try to piece his storyline together. And in the first game, you're just trying to make sure you get a clearer memory. Because, as I say, the memories start off quite fuzzy. And then there's another way of getting a reward and paying to get another from another deck of memory cards, a card that goes over the top of the one you've already got, and that gives a much clearer picture as more and more becomes clearer as you chat to him more. And it's quite funny because you take it from these decks, you think it'd be annoying, you're getting the wrong cards or the card that doesn't match, but sometimes you're desperate for him to talk about, you do the thing you need to do in one line, you're desperate for him to talk about something else, but you don't, you're desperate for him to talk about something else, but you don't have the choice about what he talks about. So a lot of the time you're there just sort of almost shouting at him, "Shut up, Billy! Tell us about this other thing."
We know about this.
Yeah.
We'll go further back.
That is remarkably, having experience of working in a hospital, it's remarkably like what some patients are like when you're desperately trying to talk to them about a certain thing and they'll tell you on a big tangent about something else. So I found that quite amusing. And it's just got a really nice feel to it. And it's got sort of 10 scenarios. So we played the basics, scenario one, which is basically the intro to the game. And then they let us read the kind of intro to scenario two. So I can see how I can't tell you anything about it, but I can see how the rules are going to change and the game is going to develop and become more interesting as sort of things go on. I think it's truly novel, really brilliant. I can't think it's good, anything I've played. And it must be said, it's really, really clear how passionate the guys at Hub Games are.
It's a masterpiece, I think, this game. In a way.
It's going to be one of those kind of unique hits, it sounds like.
It is special. Nothing else I've played. I've played a lot of good games.
Gets the attention that it sounds like it deserves.
I think it will. I think people have heard about it now.
Also, because it is co-op, and some people could say, it's going to be dominated by the alpha gamer, as I point at Lewis. but it can't be dominated by the alpha gamer because someone's, as I say, whoever's playing, someone becomes a shift manager, they are in control of the day. They can't actually go in and help on the patient. So they're kind of sat in the office kind of doing the paperwork. But they can say, right, Sam, you're going to go in with this assistant because you get a couple extra pawns to help you out on it. And then Sam's in control of that shift for that thing. So he gets to decide whether he's going to offer care and keep Billy alive or sit down and interrogate Billy for more information kind of thing.
It's not interrogate Billy. it's spend some time chatting.
There was a point where it was like...
Get the candles out.
Billy went into cardiac arrest. He needed help. We had to rescue him. I was in control. And I was like, right, the chap next to me, I've forgotten his name, you can go in. You can take this assistant in. He only had one token, use his tokens to save Billy.
There's a currency in the game.
Yeah, and you needed five to fully heal him. He only had one. He goes, but that's no good. We can't rescue him like that. I said, no, we just need the one. We need these tokens that this other lady has.
Yeah, so we can
then get more information.
Get him talking.
And it was basically going into a black site and giving him adrenaline and saying, you're staying awake now. Tell us what we need to know, kind of
Not
thing.
That, Billy. Tell us what we actually need to know. We know about that. You've told us about that.
But aside from that, it's a fantastic game.
So this is a game with a really strong story element. Is it? What's the replayability like? And is there a spoiler issue?
Kind of. It's 10 scenarios. The same story cards will be used throughout the 10 scenarios. So in the first scenario, you're pretty much going to know his backstory. But that aids to, I think, what happens in the next 9 scenarios.
Yeah, so I was talking to the guys about it, and essentially you need to get to know the stories better in order to do the harder levels. Because there are certain times at harder levels where your mission is to find a certain memory. So you need to know which line that's in to know which line you're aiming to try and get out. And you also, sort of, which are the five lines. And also there are sort of certain clues hidden within the pictures they were saying. I don't know this, there's sort of hinting, there's sort of clues hidden within the pictures.
It's a bit time stories-ish where it's like one game, well, I was like time stories isn't replayable, but it's got that thing of, I like the ones where you've got the... there's like a little thing on a corner of a picture somewhere that you can spot, and that's the clue you need. It sounds like it's that kind of thing.
That was the impression they were giving. They're very secretive about it all, but that was the
kind of... Obviously, it's irrelevant for scenario 2, 3, and 4, but for scenario 5 it's exactly what you need.
So you, even though you're seeing the same 5 storylines every time, you kind of need to have done that in order to be able to be successful in the further scenarios.
It's almost like a campaign game more than
It's a campaign game. So I guess it would have limited replayability. And there's 10 scenarios. It's very unique.
I think you'll probably get your money's worth from it.
It sounds like it won't be too expensive if it's basically one single scenario. Essentially, it's 10 scenarios, but within the same set of cards.
Yeah.
And actually, it's going to be a fairly... It should be a relatively cheap production cheaper production than creating 10 sets of 10 scenario cards.
And then there's the room for expansion there as well. They can always add in more storylines and other bits as well.
So that's from Hub Games, and that's going to print next week. So just after the UK Games Expo.
And it's coming out at Essen.
So we'll send Sam to pick up some copies for us.
Yes, indeed. So that was, that was Holding On, The Troubled Life of Billy Kerr by Hub Games.
One game I want to talk about that was probably my second favourite next to Holding On, and that was from Lucky Duck Games, and that was Jetpack Joyride. Now, when they announced this, I said in my head, I was like, I can't see how they can do Jetpack Joyride as a board game. It's fast, it's frantic, it's a quick reaction kind of thing on your iPad. If you haven't played it, you can go and play it for free anyway, so go and check it out. But the app one, not the game. And so we said, okay, let's give it a chance. And he said, oh, it's going to be like 20 minutes playing, so it won't be a problem kind of thing, or even less than that. So it's basically, it is 4 tiles, quite large tiles, that make up a lab, and each person's got their own lab of 4 tiles, and they're all random, and they've got the obstacles that you find in Jetpack Joyride, and you then have all these transparent yellow
Tetris shaped
bits in the middle of the table, and it's basically a real time, fast paced grab parts, and you've got to start from one end of your lab and work your way through the lab, getting out the other side, putting these polyono tiles on your lab and avoiding the obstacles like normal. So it's that kind of frantic crabbing stuff and trying to get it to fit and putting it back and get another piece and saying, does that fit? And you've got to join it up all the way. You can't do bits and segments and things like that. So you've got to make your way through. And it really simulates the app game. I was so impressed with it. Like this, it was so frantic. It was like playing the app kind of thing. And it's so frantic, it's fast. And then there's also challenges. They give the challenges. They bring out 3 cards and they say, right, high five 3 scientists, because you've got the little scientist dudes on the bottom kind of thing. So you've got then try and get your polyomino shapes going along the bottom to high five or going over the top.
Which is remarkably hard.
It is hard. The challenges are quite hard, or run along the top of the ceiling for 10 spaces and things like that. And then you're racing, and then as soon as someone finishes, that's it, stop. Yeah. Everyone stops. You count up how many coins you've gathered. You do your challenges, you get some bonuses, and then you do round 2. You swap around
and
stuff.
I liked how it wasn't just a blind race as well, because I kind of thought, oh, it's just going to be first to finish, I must be good.
Yeah.
So I just boshed it out super fast the first round we did, and didn't worry too much about picking up all these other bits. Mm. But there is a bonus for if you finish first, but it has to be out for that round, and it wasn't out that round. So I just finished with about 3 or 4 points, and everyone else who hadn't even finished, I think they'd only got to about the third tile, they weren't even close to finishing, they all got significantly higher scores than me because they'd spent more time finding the correct shapes to make sure that they got through these bonus bits. So it was it's quite good. It's not just a kind of mad kind of bum rush to the end.
So that's out at Kickstarter 10th of July, I believe.
Yeah.
And it's going to be about £25-ish.
That's what he said, isn't it?
Maybe £30 for a deluxe set, where it's your average, so bits and pieces in there. So definitely a backing for me.
It's a good family game, isn't it? It also introduces a couple of other interesting concepts. There's an element of drafting, where sort of some basically power-up cards come out between each round.
So you get upgrades,
upgrades, which then get drafted in sort of reverse order, so the person's coming last. So it's a built-in catch-up mechanic. You know, if you're playing this with your family, it's so quick and easy, especially if you're playing with younger kids who'll enjoy the tactileness of it. They're then introduced to the idea of some basic drafting. And then there's also, because you get them and then you get another one, there's some very basic leveling up and comboing as well, which you can really, really make pay off, which I think is really good. I think Joel's combo ones were, he let everyone else had to sort of stop playing and he could start with two pieces and then he had another bit that could he could shout, stop, and then we had to stop and he could put another piece on. So he was three pieces in before I could even start in the final round, so it gives him a big head
start.
Didn't
help your win, of course.
So speaking of app games, I know the two of you...
Yeah, just to clarify, that was Jetpack Joyride by Lucky Duck Games.
Sure. Now, I know the two of you played another app-based game that people have been talking about, Chronicles of Crime.
Yes.
How was that?
Fun.
It was good, actually.
Yeah.
Very good deduction. It's there's a lot of scanning. So if you get someone that's very controlling... point at Lewis again, they would just try and scan everything kind of thing. There was literally a point I had to take the phone away. So let's just have other people have a go, because there was a family with us as well. And then we were going around.
Yeah, we were a bit crowded, really. We played at five, and the guy did say he doesn't really play well at five. I think that game's a two, maximum three-player max.
I mean,
it's really kind of a solitaire game.
Yeah. And you could be,
it's kind of like any cooperative game, though, isn't it? As long as you've got the right group, then you'll be okay.
But there's nothing in it that will.
But there's there's a good time because the app is all app based. Every time you scan something, depends what you're scanning, it will add time to. Well, it basically extends your day, and you're going actually through like time and day,
passes.
And then it gets to a point where you reach a time and your chief's calling you up, or the chief constable's calling you up saying you're running out of time. We need to know who the suspect is.
Of course, you need to do a bit more deduction, and not just
scan everything,
get all the clues.
Yeah. And the best thing is that you might go into a location. Let's say you go into a room, and then it would say, right, now you need to look around the room and find evidence kind of thing. And you get these silly goggles that look... We've got a picture of Lewis wearing it. You look like Mr. Magoo kind of thing, blowing up eyes. But you clip it onto the phone and you look around and you're in a virtual reality room.
Yeah.
And you're going, well, I can see books, I see clothes, I can see a dog. And then people are going through these cards trying to find the items that come
out. Yeah, you've got these cards with these lists of different things, like electronic devices, books and clothing. So you're looking through, shouting at people, like, I can see that, I can see this, is that there? And they're like, I can see posts on the wall, I've got paper. Yeah. Is paper that? I don't know, we'll put it there and test it. And obviously, if you do that, it takes up more time and lowers your score.
And then you can actually pass that on to, and someone else can, and it's timed, isn't it, for about 30 seconds, I think.
Right.
And then you can pass it on, someone else can have a look and see if they can see something you didn't see. Which is quite good. Everyone get involved.
Yeah.
You're talking about the replayability of Chronicles of Crime. The one thing I like, I don't know, you spoke about them, spoke about it to them, but I love the idea that actually what they're going to do is you've got the core set of things, like all the people, all the items, whatever, but all the QR codes, they'll just reprogram for different scenarios for later on. So you start a scenario and the QR code does something different for that scenario, which I think adds quite a lot to the replayability of that
game. Definitely,
so it sounds really interesting.
Yeah. You played anything you like, Mike? Or have you mentioned something already?
Well, one game I was hoping to check out that hasn't come out yet is Combria. It's a game. The theme ostensibly is about a city in Portugal, historical theme, but it's basically a pure point salad game.
As any game named after a city in Europe.
Absolutely. It goes without saying. Actually, I think a lot of these Stephen Feld point salad games get a bad rap as far as theme goes. So I think a lot of his games take Trajan, game about the Roman Empire. Lots of different things you're doing to get points, but actually I think each of those components has some sort of theme tied to what you're doing. I think you can say that about a lot of his games. This game, Combria, was pretty much... no theme whatsoever. You couldn't even connect the different things you were doing to the theme. That said, it seemed like a pretty pleasant, well-oiled game with lots of things to do. So definitely on my horizon of things of interest to look at. If you like point salad games, but just be warned, there's not much more there than the salad. So any meat eaters... go elsewhere.
I've always been a carnival, Mike.
Sam, have you played?
Yeah, well, I initially was going to talk about Guild Ball because the Steamforged games are right across from our stand as well, so we've been looking at them all weekend. And we finally went over and had a little look at that, which is basically a kind of medieval football, Blood Bowl-esque type game. But that's not really my kind of game, so I'm not going to talk about that. Last night, we played High Society, which is the... Is that Rainer Knizia?
Rainer Knizia.
Being republished by Osprey. It's been very popular at the stand, really popular. And I can see why. It's a really nice little game, almost like an auction come bidding trick-taking style game, which is really nice.
And the art in the latest edition is fantastic.
It is really nice. It's got that 1920s sort of Art Deco or Art Nouveau kind of look to it, and it is really nice. And it was a lot of fun when you've had a couple of beers and you've had a really tiring day and you're just kind of smack-talking to each other and stuff. It was really fun. And really easy to learn. But the one I will talk about, seeing as you talked about Jetpack Joyride.
So that was High Society.
That was High Society from Osprey Games. Yeah. But this one, Nick and I from Meeple's Corner, we went over to Artipia Games and we had a game of Kitchen Rush.
Ah, yes.
Nick actually had trained and worked as a chef in the industry like 15, 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it was... He would never play it again because it was so accurately recreating the restaurant business.
Brilliant.
So that was actually high praise.
It was high praise, yeah.
Because he found it so stressful that he didn't want to play it again. I thought it was really good. It's, you literally only get 4 minutes per round to do things. But to give you an idea, you're basically chefs in a restaurant kitchen and you, stroke your workers, are egg timers. And you send your egg timer workers out to different parts of the kitchen by flipping them up. So you've got 30 seconds or 20 seconds, whatever they're timed to. So, yeah, you flip the egg timer over when you place them and you can't use them again until that egg timer has run through, at which point you're going to move them to another spot or take the same action again, but you just flip the egg timer around and it counts down again. Now, I forgot to say that actually at the start of the round, you tap the countdown timer, which gives you 4 minutes.
Yep.
It's half of the entirety of the round. You and your other players have a couple of egg timers each, so you're constantly kind of moving around trying to coordinate with each other to do all the different tasks, like go shopping to get the ingredients you need, or to go to the stockroom to get them and put them on the recipes that the waiters are bringing you, or to cook them in the ovens, or to add spice and then to send them back to the waiters to take to the customer. And you have to do all of this and get a certain amount of money from the customers by sending out the orders, and a certain amount of prestige points by completing complicated recipes at the end of the game. And so effectively a game will take I think it's 4 rounds of 4 minutes, so you're talking about 12 minutes, so make it a quarter of an hour basically to play a full game. We played 2 rounds and both of us were exhausted and we were like, yeah, we've had enough, going back to the stand. It's a lot less tiring, but it was a very, very clever, very clever game. I would play it again, but I'd need to be not quite so tired from working on the stand all day, I think. It is actually a very mentally exhausting game to try and coordinate all those things all at the same time.
But
it does give you a very strong, like from what Nick said, it gives you a very strong sense of how chefs have to manage a kitchen be able to fulfill orders in a certain time frame. So that was actually a really fun game to try finally. Fits in with the idea of the real-time type games that you're playing with Jetpack Joyride.
We played that one Essen, didn't we, Joel? We had quite a good time with that one. So that's
again, it's difficult when you're playing in a convention environment when it's noisy and you're tired.
So that's Kitchen Rush by Artipia Games.
So we're going to finish off with two more things quickly. Me, Lewis, and Mike went to see The Dark Room.
Yes.
They were so, what's the word I'm thinking of?
Blown away?
No, before you went in.
Skeptical.
Skeptical about it, I think, because I was bigging this up so much, saying it's the best thing here, and you need to do it. And they were like, oh, fine, we'll do it. And then they came out with the thoughts of...
It was absolutely bloody brilliant.
Hilarious.
Absolutely hilarious. I think I was just leaking a little bit of urine permanently. I don't think I stopped laughing. He's an absolutely brilliant, fantastic, funny guy. So, so funny.
Brilliant, funny. I was skeptical, didn't want to go. But, yeah.
I talked you into it. Are you pleased?
Yeah. Really?
I was like, come on, mate, we've got to go to the dark room. Joel says the dark room is really good. He always says we've got to go to the dark room. At least we can go and tell Joel he's wrong.
You should definitely go and bring your children.
Don't take your children. There is a children's version one, but don't take it to the real one. There is a lot of swearing and adult jokes. But in fairness, there were some kids there, and the jokes just seemed to fly over their heads. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
That was one of the best bits. It was one of those bits the kids found some bits funny, but there were, it's a bit like, you know, you get a really good kids movie
where there's a load of Pixar films.
Yeah, like a Pixar film where there's a load of really good adult jokes sort of hidden away that kids just don't get, and it flies over their head. It was very good.
It's one thing I still haven't done. I've bought tickets because they're only like £1 or £2 a ticket or something when they first started coming
up now. Yeah, when they first started coming in, yeah.
And I didn't go. I was like, I think it was so cheap. I was just like, oh, I'm so tired. I just didn't bother going.
Mm-hmm.
And then did the same with Nightmare Live last year, but I really need to go 1 year.
You do. You've
not been to the dark room.
No.
Too busy, Sam.
Well, I feel like I know the UK is better than you.
I think you probably do. I think all you do. I know how to work at it. I'm not sure how to experience it, isn't it?
So, yes. So, finish off. Thoughts. Overall thoughts of it.
Yeah, I've had a really good time. I think it's got a lot more chilled out vibe than Essen, and that suits me quite well because I sometimes struggle in massive crowds and where there's so much going on, I feel like I'm missing out on things all the time. But here, there's just a little bit of a slower pace and everyone seems to be very friendly. And I like the way, I think just about every lunchtime queue I've been in, I've started chatting to people and, you know, it's great to, you know, hear about what things they've been finding out. And sometimes I've gone to investigate them in the afternoon and, you know, and hopefully some of them are listening now.
Yeah.
As we've met some really great people, it's been absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a really good time, too. Like I said, it reminds me of a lot of the big American conventions like Origins. Relaxed. Compared to Essen, I was slightly disappointed in maybe not seeing as many big game releases. And the publishers don't really release quite this early. They're waiting for the big American conventions. But certainly there's never a shortage of things to do and games to play in the evenings.
I think that's something that's going to change as the expo grows as well, because I think we will start seeing companies releasing games and having announcements of releasing games. It's starting to kind of happen softly, like I said, with Eastern Wonders. It was released effectively, but it wasn't Loud Hailer. It's not going to be released properly till Origins or Gen Con or whichever one it is. Yeah. But they will be. You know, it was here, and people knew that it was going to be here, and they were looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as some of these British companies that are here, and like Osprey Games and ITV and people like that, if they get a big game. So I saw ITV have got two Reiner Knizia games coming out or in development.
Yeah.
You know, they'll eventually be releasing a game, and why wouldn't they choose the UK Games Expo as a UK publisher to release the game? So I think it will happen. I think in a year or two, we'll probably see a reasonably sized big hit be released as an announced game at the Expo. And I think that's the point at which we can say it's arrived as one of the big conventions of the world.
Definitely. Yeah. As usual, I've already pre-booked my hotels for next year.
Oh, they're already extortionate.
For your family, are they going to come with you this year?
Hasn't told the wife about it yet.
Yeah. And this is an annual thing I have to do every year. I love it so much. And I remember, like, Lewis pointed out, like, at Essen, I had that bit of a slump where on Friday I was just like, what am I doing here? It's like, not getting this kind of thing.
You very much thrive on the social side.
I'm like, and I'm up at 7 o'clock, and he's upset with me because it's like too early for him. And I'm like, let's go downstairs. Why do you want to go so early? Because we can.
It doesn't open until 9:30.
Yeah, get in the queue, enjoy the queue, get the coffee, get the Starbucks, get in the that queue takes an hour on its own.
So yeah, I mean, okay, it's growing, it's getting, feels like it's just growing out of control. I'm just pretty sure they've got it under control.
But it is very. I want to iterate that the organisation of the expo is exceptional.
It really is.
They really have got it down pat now, I think. There's always one or two little bits that always feel like they could do a refinement, but every year they're improving and it's getting slicker and much more managed. And I can't, you know, as a trader, I think the only thing that we would have complaints about is that every year we've been allowed to go into the press preview, and this year we weren't allowed to go into the press preview. But I'm not entirely sure if that was just the volunteer on the gate that was not letting us through or not, but we were blocked. We couldn't get through.
It's so funny. I mean, sometimes I said to these, as I went as press, these just went as exhibitors for Meeple's Corner. I was like, oh, you won't be able to get in the press preview because, like, you need the press badge.
Sorry, and to clarify, I was helping out Pegasus Spiele.
Oh, yeah, not really, you weren't. You helped him set up.
I think if you go and ask them, they'll be able to verify my account.
But no, they walked in and they weren't stopped. And then there was also a friend of mine I bumped into. He was walking around it with just a weekend badge. I was like, how did you get in here? Just walked in.
You chose the wrong dude.
Yeah. What is going on, kind of thing. So maybe they need to tighten up.
Did you go in from the Hall 2 entrance? Or did you come in from the, as in the main, off the foyer? Or did you go in via the Hall 2 stands, like where the bring and buy is, that kind of bit?
Because
we tried to go through the bring and buy bit, which was actually kind of part gated. And I'm wondering whether, actually, if you went through Hall 2, we'd have probably got in. It's just that we went through the sort of side entrance, if you like, and we were stopped.
I did notice around the back of the press preview, there's nothing, there's no one there. So you probably could have walked around the back. Mm. And I think that's what happened to him.
Yeah.
I saw you just jumped under the fence on the side.
I didn't.
You
I didn't.
When you came back, you jumped under the fence on the
side. Oh, it's because I had to go and pick something up from the stand.
But, so yeah.
But anyway, that was, I think as a trader, that would be the only thing we would say about it. But I think that may have just been a mistake.
But that's all
of another thing. The thing is, though, it was quite full.
There was a lot of people in there, yeah. But we've always been, as traders, the only problem is you don't get a chance to get around and see everything.
No.
And I think I wanted to go see the Billy Kerr game.
Mm.
I wanted to go and see a couple of other things. I can't remember, from the life of me, I can't remember what they were now. But I wanted to sort of, I knew it was here, and chances were the only place I could see it was going to be if I quickly had a 5-minute look in the press preview like we normally do. And I didn't get that opportunity this year. And the same happened with Bring and Buy. We normally get a chance to be able to nip in for half an hour before the doors open to just check what's in there. And
they certainly managed to solve the problem of the open gaming tables, didn't they?
I mean, we're literally talking about tiny little things.
Yeah, exactly.
Every year it gets better and better.
It seems very efficient and very well run.
I mean, the thing is, it's getting a longer week for the UK Games Expo now, where it used to be Saturday, Sunday, and there was Friday where it was like kind of set up, press preview and things going on. Then it opened on Friday afternoon and set up in the morning, and now it's now gone into a Thursday where press preview is, retail summit is, lots of activities going on that are organised by publishers and things like that. So the UK Games Expo weekend is now becoming a week, which is good in a way, but
I can't see it going. I was just thinking, would it go to Thursday? I don't think it will go to being a public thing on the Thursday. They might do more trade things on the Thursday, just to try and do things like, you know, publishers talking to designers and all that kind of stuff. Because all that happens in the background, you don't really see it, is that the game designers and game publishers are all having meetings in the background. And that might change. They might do more of that on, say, the Thursdays, maybe, instead. But otherwise, I think, you know, they've got a format now that I think they're going to stick to for at least a year or two. And it seems to be working. I've not had a problem with kind of crowds or anything. It was very busy yesterday, but it wasn't so busy you couldn't.
It wasn't like Essen, where you just get trapped in a tide and then you can't stop.
Go around it again.
And the good news is, I did manage to pick up. I was the first customer at Taiwan Board Game Design for Lord of the Diangler.
It's not called Lord of the Diangler.
Oh, it is in their language. And that's the one I'm going with.
In Japanese.
Who was the dude that was doing the American guy that was doing the draw with Paul Grogan last
night? I don't know
who
that guy is.
Oh, he's Edward from Heavy Cardboard.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, because someone said they recognised him and I didn't recognise him.
Sorry, Edward.
Edward from Heavy Cardboard. We didn't recognise you.
You were very funny. You were entertaining and spoke well.
I didn't hear a word of what they were saying. I could just about hear the numbers from where we were.
We were right at the back. They were playing a game.
All we could hear was... I
could just about hear the colour. And whenever it said blue, I'd kind of stop playing and poke my head up. No, it's not my number. Okay, back to this. Brilliant.
Another successful year for the
expert. Another very successful year.
Can you tell we're all quite tired?
Rambling around.
Next year's dates are the 31st to the 2nd of June. I have no figures or numbers yet. But
they were
expecting
46,000, I think, was their anticipated number, roughly.
It's quite good.
I believe Friday they had something like 11,000 in for Friday, which was amazing.
Wow. And it was much busier on the Saturday as well.
Sales-wise, for Meeple's Corner, no specific figures, but we always try and compare to the previous year to see how we do day-to-day. And this year, because of the extra time on Friday, and because of the basically you get all the main buyers come in on the Friday to get the things they really want, We actually did a better Friday this year than we did a Saturday last year, which is pretty big. Amazing.
Yes.
And we were only a short way off of Saturday's target from Saturday's golf number from last year, this year. Just a bit under, but I think that was a result of Friday.
Friday.
But ultimately, it's just been yet another successful expo. I wasn't sure how this year would go. That little bit longer on from Brexit and all the rest of it, but actually it's been every bit as successful as it always has been. So,
yeah, definitely. Great. Wow. So that's it. We'll wrap up. Thank you for listening, and I'll do the outro in a minute or later.
Thank you very much, guys.
Awesome.
Thanks.
So I have some facts and figures for you from UK Games Expo 2018. This year they had 21,700 unique attendances, a turnstile attendance of over 39,000, with exhibitors, attendance and floor space, it all grew by 30% compared to last year, which is amazing for UK Games Expo and for the hobby and industry altogether. This year was an excellent show. I am so grateful of meeting old friends, new friends, and I'm sad I didn't bump into some people I've met before at previous shows and friends that normally go. Hope to see you next year. Thanks to Meeple's Corner for sponsoring this show as normal and letting us use their facilities, and also check out our YouTube channel where there should be videos going up about exploring the show and what we got up to. Check out our website devondice.co.uk for more stuff, content and video game reviews and other proceedings. For now and everyone else, hope to see you at the next podcast. And now it's your turn.
Thanks, guys. I better go back to the stand.
Yeah. Right, let's get some food.